Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Wrestle-On.
Yay!
Today we'll be talking about the season 3 finale, The War Machines, which consists of 4 episodes that are untitled. I'm still sad about that. That aired from June 25th, 1966 to July 16th, 1966, and that was
Joe Facts.
It was kind of a Joe fact.
Yeah, it's not as fun anymore without the episode titles.
You guys, every single time we would watch a new episode, he would sigh when it just said like episode 3. When there wasn't an episode title, he would go, it's not the same.
And it won't be the same for 23 more seasons. Until you get to the Eccleston stuff. And that's a Ben fact.
Yeah, and that surprising voice was Mr. Ben Padden.
Hello, I'm alive.
Welcome back, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be welcome back to a podcast that doesn't happen very often. So I appreciate you guys having me back and letting me ramble.
No problem. Like I think we're going to have you back in like 2 episodes as well, because you wanted that Cyberman episode.
I did. Tomb of the Cybermen, I guess, is the... Oh, no, the 10th Planet. I skipped a bunch of stories there. Just like, oh, we don't need to see the regeneration. Let's jump straight into Tomb. No, yeah, 10th Planet, which is of particular interest to me because I only saw it for the first time last year on account of the fact that it has missing episodes.
So you don't watch the missing episode ones, or...?
My philosophy is if it's missing, I'm not seeing a complete whole. I would rather see a complete story as complete as is possible, and if that means, you know, a telesnap reconstruction, which I'm less keen on, or an animated reconstruction, which, you know, usually they're pretty good. Like the animated reconstruction for the Invasion was really good. The reconstruction for the 10th Planet I thought was quite good. I would rather do that rather than, you know, watch episode 3 of a 6-part serial where the other 5 episodes are missing, and then just look up the rest on the TARDIS data core. Like, no, that's not as enjoyable an experience for me. Plus, when these episodes get rediscovered, as has happened recently with The Enemy of the World and The Web of Fear, it's like getting brand new old Doctor Who, which I think is the greatest gift a person can receive. It's like Christmas.
That is true. That when people discover it, you're like, ah. Whereas we'll be like, we kind of saw that. Sort of. We heard it.
You heard bits of it, yeah. I'm all about waiting to see if they get rediscovered. And if they don't ever get rediscovered and I don't get to see Marco Polo in its entirety, then I'll kill myself.
I mean, really, you're probably not missing much.
I liked Marco Polo.
I liked it, but like, you know.
Tagana.
Gesundheit.
I know, you really like Tagana.
I have a slight crush on Tagana, the villain of that particular serial.
How many crushes have you had during your classic Doctor Who run so far? Be honest. Be absolutely honest.
I want to say at least 2.
Okay, that's a lie, because this story here is The War Machines. This is story number 27. So you've had at least 27 crushes. That is a fact, because there is always someone in a Doctor Who serial who makes you think, oh.
But there could be overlap, like a companion. You know? So,
right,
over multiple series.
For, like,
series.
Most of Ian's run, it was Ian.
Well, Ian's your crush.
Okay, I do.
Mine's Steven, so.
Wait, no, but I have that one, too. And also Dodo.
You like all the companions, really?
I do.
Well, if you like Dodo, then I've got some bad news, because The War Machines is her last serial.
I don't want to talk about it. I'm really mad. Which is unfortunate, because that's what we're doing here.
You're mad that she left the show 50 years ago.
Yeah.
That's your emotional state right now. Like, 50 years ago she left the show, and now you're upset about it.
Well, for Tony, it's a much more recent development.
But it just happened to me. I experience all of my emotions 110%.
But half a century late.
Well, I mean, it's like, you know, if you saw, like, a really sad movie for the first time that came out 50 years ago. You're sad now after having watched it. You're not like, oh, well, that was 50 years ago.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. I mean, I grew up watching a lot of this stuff as a kid because my dad was like, he was born on January 11th, 1964. So he was born during, I want to say, the third serial. I think he was born either during Marco Polo or just in time for the tail end of the Daleks. So my dad's been a lifelong Doctor Who fan. So when I was a kid, we'd buy the VHSs. He'd buy the VHSs and then we'd sit down and watch them. I wore out Robot, which is Tom Baker's first story. I wore that tape out. That was done.
Yeah, we don't have that. I've seen all of the first Doctor and a little bit of the second Doctor, but Tony's not seen any of it.
It's kind of exciting though, because everything that's happening in Classic Who is happening for the first time for me.
It to be honest, is happening a little bit for me too, because it's been so long since I went through the first time. I'm actually starting to get to the point where I'm like remembering things a little better because it hasn't been that long since I was at this point my first go through. If that makes sense.
It does not, but I will nod and smile.
But before we get too much into talking about the episode, I'd like to talk a little bit about Gallifrey 1. And your experience going there.
I went to that very suddenly and unexpectedly. I was not planning on going. It was over the Valentine's Day weekend. A friend of mine who used to live down in Temecula here in Southern California and has since moved to Austin in Texas because they are a crazy person who hates their own life, sent me a text message on Wednesday as they were flying to Los Angeles and just said, hey, are you going to Gallifrey 1? And I said, no, I missed the boat for tickets this year. And then they said, oh, do you want to go? I have a ticket. And I said, well, I can't afford to go to Gallifrey 1 now, so it's no. And then she said, well, it's not Gallifrey 1 without you, so you're going. I'll see you on Thursday. So yeah, I got an Uber down to the LAX Marriott Hotel, which is where the convention happens here in sunny Los Angeles, although it was very foggy over the Valentine's Day weekend, and just spent the entire weekend with a bunch of fellow Doctor Who geeks and wonderful human people, human people, as opposed to the non-human kind, which it being a Doctor Who convention can and frequently does happen. I got to laugh with Samuel Anderson, who played Danny Pink in season 8. I got to share a smile with John Hurt, the great Sir John Hurt, and I got to have a little bit of a cry with Claire Higgins, who played Ahilla in Night of the Doctor, and more recently in Hellbent, which is a very, very emotional weekend. But it's a lot of fun. If you guys ever get the opportunity to come to LA for Gallifrey 1, I absolutely recommend it, because it is just one of the most edifying convention experiences that I have in my annual convention calendar. You're surrounded by people who are just as passionate about this daffy British science fiction series as you are. Everyone's friendly, everyone's welcoming. There's so many different levels of fandom. There's the people who grew up watching the classic series, and there's the people who just hopped on board with From the Eccleston stuff onwards. There's people who are just now getting into Doctor Who and, you know, are experiencing Capaldi for the first time and going back and experiencing Eccleston and Tennant and Smith. For this wonderful appetizer sampler of people. I was going to say smorgasbord, but that felt too cliche, so I went in a different direction with it. But I think you still get kind of the it's a spread of people.
Definitely food.
Yeah, there's food, definitely. I got invited onto a panel halfway through that panel because one of the panelists said, I've got to go, and ran out the door. That panel was about the Doctor Who books, like the Virgin New Adventures and the BBC stuff and the more recent things and some of the non-fiction books. I think I knew slightly more than the panelists, which was odd, but I had a fantastic time at Gallifrey 1. It's easily my favorite convention of the entire year. I love it. You didn't get any actual information from that. All you heard was, it's a Doctor Who convention, there are people there, I had a good time. That's the cliff notes for the last 2.5 minutes of unfocused rambling that just came out of my mouth.
And you were on a book panel. We got that.
And I was
well.
On a book panel, yeah.
And that you had various interactions with famous people.
I did. I mean, the Claire Higgins thing was particularly emotional for me because if there's anyone listening to this who knows who I am and is familiar with my personal history, at the end of 2014, about a year and a half ago now, both of my parents passed away. My mother in England passed away, and then a month and a half later, my father here in the States, he also passed away. And that obviously kind of colored the entirety of 2015 for me. And, you know, parents if they do their job correctly, they will do two things. They will raise you right, and then they will die. And that's something that I was always very aware of, but losing them so suddenly and so quickly, and they were both in their 50s as well, so they weren't, it's not like they were ancient and decrepit, and that's not where they were in their chronology, but they had reached the end of it. So the suddenness and the tragedy of it kind of hung over my head like a damp cloth. But seeing Claire Higgins on screen as Ahilla, she reminded me so much of my mother. And when I actually got to talk to her, which was actually right at the tail end of the convention, like literally 5 minutes after closing ceremonies, I just told her this because seeing her was such an emotional experience. And we talked a little bit, and I told her, you know, what I'm doing in LA, and I told, you know, I talked to her a bit about my mom, and she just gave me this really big, loving hug that lasted what felt like 1,000 years. And I got to cry on her shoulder a little bit, and it was just really emotional for me. And you can edit this part out because it's just me being all gushy, and she was just such a wonderful, warm, and it was her first convention as well. She'd never done a convention at all before Gallifrey won this weekend, and she was in Hellraiser. Like, I'm amazed that she hasn't done like any of the MCM London Comic Con conventions or anything like that. So that for me was like a huge, huge emotional moment. So that's a little bit more personal than, I went to a convention, I had a good time, I like clipper ships. Like, that's, I gave you a little bit more depth.
You can't see, but it looks like Tony is about to cry.
So. No, it's just a very sweet story.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it.
I'm welling up now thinking about it. And it was, I mean, really, it was just this beautiful moment. And I will treasure it always. Not expecting to go to Gallifrey at all, I went and I had what may be the most life-affirming, wonderful experience. Like last year, it was either last year or the year before, Katie Manning was there. Katie Manning played Jo Grant during the John Pertwee era. And she and I had a wonderful conversation about, you know, pursuing your dreams and the rough and tumble world of trying to make it in the entertainment industry, because I, you know, I'm a stand-up comedian, and when you're a stand-up comedian in LA, you perform a lot and earn very, very little. So it's obviously a kind of a tricky lifestyle. But every year I go, like, I have this life-affirming experience that kind of gets me through the next 12 months. This year really was it. For me, it was life-changing, and the wonderful Claire Higgins was a huge, huge part of that. And she's probably never going to hear this, but I'll get to thank her at some point in person in the future. But and I got to thank her at the time as well. But see, now I'm just rambling. This is just rambling. Why are we doing this?
Because it's great. Because we're not. Because neither one of us wants to interrupt you.
No, it's you guys need to. If you guys, and I'm saying this with absolute honesty and earnesty and another sty. Whatever steez you want, I'm going to throw it in there. You guys have to come to Gallifrey One next year. You have to do it. Do a live show. Submit yourself for a panel. Do a live watch-a-thon of WrestleOn.
That would be so much fun.
Yeah.
We'll share a hotel room. We'll get Ray there. Ray and Michelle can come. They can put the baby somewhere. They can hang it on a wall for like 3-4 days. Come and be Gallifrey people.
I'm down for that.
We just have to acquire some money, I think. We can. It's doable.
Yeah, it's doable.
Just do it. Just do it. If nothing else, it'd be great. It'd be great to see you again, Joseph. And I don't think I've ever actually, Tony, been in the same room as you.
No. Not in real meat space.
Yeah, that's something we can do. And if you guys need recording equipment to record the podcast on location, I can definitely hook you guys up with that.
I mean, I'm sold.
Yeah, I'm down for it. Yeah.
Just do it. Oh, my God. And the... pardon me, that you can definitely keep in. Do not edit that out or I will sue. So they do a masquerade called the Masquerade of Mandragora, which is basically the Oscars of the Doctor Who Cosplay Awards every year. And it is a phenomenal event. So the costumes were fantastic. A friend of mine, who, by the way, literally goes by the name of Troll, she did a gorgeous Miss Frizzle as a Time Lady costume.
What?
That was absolutely stunning. And she did the headdress, and she had fabric with like that was very Miss Frizzle-esque on it, with like galaxies and stars and stuff. And she won best crossover. But the costumes were absolutely, absolutely phenomenal. I know in a previous year, someone did a 10th Planet era Cyberman with the, you know, the sock on the head and the mining light and tubes attached to the side of the head. You know, vintage Cybermen.
We'll try to get Tony a Robo Patrol from the Dalek Invasion of Earth.
I want those hats! I want that, and I want to be an Optera.
Yes, an Optera as well. From the web planet, yeah.
Do it, do it, do it.
I would have to hop everywhere, though.
I know I was in a grocery store at some point, and there was a Doctor Who magazine, and I picked it up, and I was just flipping through it, and I saw you, sir, dressed as Vincent. From Vincent and the Doctor. Was that for the same convention or no?
That was Gallifrey 1 2011. I went dressed as Vincent van Gogh, had my picture taken by Doctor Who magazine person of interest, Clayton Hickman, who also did the cover designs for a lot of the classic Doctor Who range. And then he texted it to Stephen Moffat. So Stephen Moffat has seen me dressed as Vincent van Gogh.
That's amazing. That's
awesome. I guess maybe we should talk about the episode or something.
Hey, I hear this is a podcast about old Doctor Who episodes.
I think it might be. It was at some point.
I don't know what it is anymore.
We just forgot to do it.
It became a very special episode of the Watchathon of Rassilon.
Is one of us addicted to caffeine pills?
And the other one of us can stop time by doing a times out signal.
And one of us is, our career is going to fail entirely after this, and we're going to go into pornography, and then sue the founder of somethingawful.com over the rights to the domain name of our own given name.
Another thing that relates to Saved by the Bell.
That's what we're talking about. Great.
What did you think we were talking about? Oh, clearly we're discussing Quantum Leap. That's obviously where this particular...
I just assumed it was some sort of TV show, like I do in my... I don't have a working memory, so I don't know shit about Saved by the Bell. So the War Machines, maybe.
Let's do it. Let's talk about the War Machines.
On with the War Machines. Did you guys already say when it originally premiered in the UK?
Yes.
Okay, then I will shut my entire mouth.
That was a Joe fact.
That's
sir.
How we start every episode, with a Joe fact.
As you mentioned, and I'm now going to repeat, the broadcast date in the UK was the 25th of June to the 16th of July, 1966. But did you know that the actual date the story is set is the 20th of July, 1966? So the story is set 4 days after the last episode broadcast.
So it's 4 days in the future.
Well, it starts off about slightly under a month in the future and then gets progressively closer.
Do you think people watching the show at the time got nervous?
Yes. Well, because, I mean, one of the big things is the post office tower where the majority of the story is actually set is a real location in London and had recently been completed at the time. So, you know, using the post office tower in the War Machines is very similar to using the Shard in the Bells of St. John during Season 7, because that was a relatively new building in London at the time as well. Only, obviously, the post office tower looks like someone, like, did a kitbash of a spaceship and just glued all these satellite dishes to the outside because they thought it would look cool, whereas the Shard looks like someone, you know, they were using 3D modeling software, but were only allowed to use 4 polygons. So that's kind of the comparison that I wanted to call attention to, is that, I mean, it's the comparison that I decided to call attention to now, rather than premeditated, because that would be insane, considering that this conversation is a meandering mess. But yeah, the post office tower, like, was a relatively new site in London at the time when this story went into production. I think it was only like a couple of years old at the time. Look at me dropping some science on those assembled.
I did remember they had the like little title cards that introduced each one, and I kind of was like, that probably looked super futuristic.
And now looks super retro.
Yes.
It does. And the interesting thing is, because on the DVD, they do restorations of the footage, but they also end up recreating the title cards and so on for episodes. So those weren't the original title cards as they were broadcast, but they're very, very good reproductions. I don't know why I felt the need to share that. That is a Ben fact of zero value to anyone.
Ben fact!
I want like a guitar of like, Ben fact! Like, that's what I want. Like, but get Tarantula in to do it, or Limousine to come in and do that riff. Anyway, so yeah, the post office tower was relatively new. Those title cards looked futuristic at the time, because you could hear the dot matrix printer in the background. Very futuristic, very high tech, very modern.
It's very interesting, I think, to have an episode about, like, computers and all this future technology that is computers, and it's probably scary, and like, that shit's old.
Yeah. And I know, like, this is, at this point in the show, we're getting, like, new creative team and stuff. It's sort of, this is the first episode that I feels like a completely different episode of Doctor Who. It doesn't...
Than what we've had before.
Yeah,
it really does.
I categorize this story as kind of the first steps into what Doctor Who would become in the Patrick Troughton era. It's much more action-packed. And even though the Doctor himself isn't as dynamic and action-y as Troughton's Doctor would become, this really, the War Machines, kind of represents the first steps towards what Doctor Who would evolve into over the next 52 years.
That being said, there are some problems I have with it, but I guess we'll get into that. I guess we should just start talking about what happened.
But What happened, Joe?
They land in London, and they put an out-of-order sign on their TARDIS.
Because that's something that they always have to do whenever they land there, and it's something that has persisted to this day.
It happens every time.
Just to make sure that nobody mistakes it for an actual phone, yeah.
And accidentally walks in. I feel like...
Because that's how they got Dodo.
Like, I was going to say, yeah, I feel like Dodo started that, and he's like, how can I make sure this never happens again?
It's very much like the episode of The Simpsons where Bart falls down the well, and that end shot of Groundskeeper Willie like nailing like the caution well sign. They're not actually doing anything. It's just like, there, now we feel like we've taken steps to prevent people from doing something stupid, and they're going to do something stupid anyway. One of the things I love is the Doctor... Can I swear on this podcast?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Okay, cool. The shit-eating grin on Bill Hartnell's face as he hangs the sign. He's like, look at me. Like, it's very...
He's so pleased with himself.
He's so proud. He's like, check me out. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's my favorite William Hartnell. The Mine very too, pleased yes. with himself William Hartnell.
I'm pretty fucking amazing. Look, if we didn't have shit to do, I would be calling my mum and I would let her know. Like, hey, mum, guess what I did? Oh, you're going to be so proud.
I could have just locked the door, but...
Could have. I mean, there's a lot of things he could have done rather than, like, hastily make a sign using a Sharpie, a bit of card, and some string. But, you know, whatever floats your candle.
My favorite is when he's really pleased about some bit of logic he's figured out. That makes no sense whatsoever.
Like in real life?
Yeah, like he's like, oh, it's clearly this obviously made up thing that I'm saying to solve the plot. And it's just like just a bunch of random nonsense. But he's super like pleased with himself for thinking of it.
My favorite thing though is that time when he was wrong. They're in a haunted house, but he's like, it's the human mind.
It's the human mind.
But it's just a haunted house.
I like that you guys said that in unison. My favorite example of the Doctor being all, yeah, I've got this nailed down. And then it turns out he's 8,000% wrong. Actually happens in Curse of the Black Spot in season 6, Matt Smith's second season. And every time in that episode, he's like, I've got a theory. I'm so smart. Whoops, no, I'm dumb. And he doesn't get it until right up to the end when the plot kind of resolves itself.
It happens a lot of the Doctor being very confident and then just immediately like, oh shit.
For the first time, this isn't really relevant to this story or indeed the podcast, but I was watching...
Why start now?
Yeah, why not? Why start now? I watched Dragonfire. I watched the first episode of Dragonfire for the first time today. And I love Sylvester McCoy's era of Doctor Who. His first season is full of clunkers. And I thought, you know what? This is the only one of his first season I haven't seen. I'm just going to sit down and watch it. The cliffhanger for the end of episode 1 is the single worst cliffhanger.
Is it the literal cliffhanger?
It's the literal cliffhanger.
With the umbrella.
But here's the thing. I've heard people talk about how dumb that cliffhanger is. I've seen clips of it, but it's not until you're watching it in context that you realize just like there's a third Doctor cliffhanger where the cliffhanger is stand back and then the cliffhanger is oh no, a floor, and then it cuts to the end titles. Like there's no context for it. This makes even less sense than that. Because what's happening is, the Doctor is on this planet looking for a dragon. Because why wouldn't you? And then he sees a railing over a cliff face. And you know what his first thing is? His first thought is, I'm going to climb over that. And then he does. And then he hangs his umbrella off the railing. And then he's hanging off the cliff for really no reason whatsoever. And then he thinks to himself, I know what will make this situation better. I'll hold on entirely to the umbrella. I'll put all of my weight on my umbrella. So he then scooches along the railing, grabs the umbrella with both hands, and then starts sliding down the umbrella. And then he's hanging. Then it just cuts to the end credits. Like, there's no reason for you to be hanging here. This is entirely point. Like, you didn't need to climb over this railing. You could have walked past it. You could have kept going. But no, you saw a railing and you thought to yourself, that seems like a fun thing to try to circumvent, despite the fact that there's a gulfing chasm. There's no call for it. And yet that's your cliffhanger for Dragonfire Episode 1.
I feel like it's when our cat gets herself stuck on top of the door. And then she wants you to get her down. It's like, well, why did you jump on top of the door then? But she's a cat. Not a Time Lord. So.
There is some overlapping similarities, in particular the greater than one quantity of lives that they get. I mean, that's not just an example of the Doctor like being, whoops, I'm wrong. That's an example of the Doctor seeing something, thinking something stupid, having a dumb idea. You know how, have you ever heard of like intrusive thoughts?
Yes.
An intrusive thought is where you'll be sitting there watching television, you'll think to yourself, I could cut my eyelashes off with those nail scissors. Or you'll be driving, you'll think, if I just take a sharp turn to the right, I'll crash into a house. And it's just no, there's no reason for it. The Doctor had an intrusive thought of, if I jumped off that railing, I'd be gone forever. And then he did it! Anyway, when you guys eventually get to Dragonfire, take this section of the podcast and just move it over there. Because that's, I mean, that is 23 years in, or sorry, 21 years into the future of this podcast.
This is actually the second time that this cliffhanger has been discussed in depth on this podcast.
It just hurts.
Because it's what it does to you.
I feel very strongly that whenever I see the Doctor making a stupid decision in classic Doctor Who, I always feel like my upset about it is slightly tempered because I can think, no, this is not the stupidest thing he's done. That is yet to come.
So the War Machine.
Yeah, let's get back to that.
What about it?
So far we've got they land in London and they put an out-of-order sign and we've been talking for nearly an hour. So let's...
So, yeah, let's so click through they this. See the tower that you previously mentioned.
There Post are computers tower. In the tower.
And he only thinks, ooh... I remember, this feels weird, like when the Daleks were here.
I don't know, it's like the Spock cameo in the second Star Trek. It's just there to add a sense of danger when there really isn't any reason for that. Like, it's just like, yep, it's dangerous.
Something bad's totally gonna happen, probably.
Because it reminds them of the Daleks. Just put that association in your brain, even though it really has nothing to do with anything.
But the Doctor just kind of shows up and is like, I'm a computer expert. And everyone's like, all yep. right.
Here, look at all of our important computers.
Sure, why not?
And at this point, I don't think he has, like, he doesn't have the psychic paper at this point. He's just...
He just showed up and was like, I'm a computer expert. I'm here to be an expert about these computers. And everyone's like, all right.
I think canonically, the first use of the psychic paper actually goes to the Eighth Doctor in one of the comics. But now I want to look it up. Because I think that is something that he could have used during his first incarnation, but he did not. Oh, no, the Second Doctor used psychic paper, according to this. Yeah, according to the TARDIS Data Core, there is a Second Doctor story called World Game, which I believe was written by Terence Dix, actually. Which, when was that published? 2005. It was actually published in October 2005. So, chronologically, that book was published after the Revived series started. But in terms of the Doctor's personal chronology, that is the earliest use of the psychic paper.
It's plausible that he had it.
Yeah, why not?
And used it.
Off-screen, maybe, yeah.
There's something that didn't need solving. Solved.
But actually, that's a kind of a theme of this episode, is everybody sort of seems to know the Doctor. It feels more like a Modern Who episode to me in that respect.
And this is the thing as well, is I think the pacing in this story, even though it's still kind of, it's very old school Doctor Who pacing because it is still kind of slow, but it zips along at quite a nice pace as well. Like, it feels at times like old school Doctor Who doing modern Doctor Who.
Like, you watch this episode and you're like, this is a different people doing this, and it's, they're doing it in a different way. That sentence, I lost it. There was more information there, and now it's gone.
So yeah, the Doctor shows up at Post Office Tower, is like, hello, I'm Mr. Computer Man, I invented the computer. And they were like, okay, cool, let's get you up to the very top of the building where all our important shit is, without looking for things like identification, or doing any kind of follow-up or background checks or anything. They just take him straight up to the top, where they meet Major Green. So they're escorted by Major Green, and they meet Professor Brett.
Which one of them killed Mr. Body?
It depends on which ending you saw when you went to see the movie in the theatres. In all of the endings, there is one common thread, and that is Wotan, which Professor Brett has been working on. It is his life's work. Like, instead of, like, going out and meeting girls and playing soccer and what have you, eating sherbet and cola cubes, he's like, I'm going to make a computer. I'm gonna start Skynet in the 60s. Why not?
And what does Wotan stand for? I don't remember.
Wim Oand Tellative Amentions N-Space. No.
N-Space.
Wotan stands for, well, hey, or this ain't nice. Wotan stands for Will Operating Thought Analog, which is the most ridiculous.
I thought you were still making a joke.
That was the least plausible.
The third one's always the real one. Quoting directly from the TARDIS Data Core, Wotan was built in the mid-1960s by a team led by Professor Brett. Brett's assistant, Professor Crimpton, that's a hell of a name, was also closely involved. The end.
That's the computer.
That is the computer who will...
That's gonna try and take over the world. Spoilers
yeah. And then we also...
We meet Polly.
We meet Polly, the secretary of...
Hello, Polly.
Professor Brett.
Listen, I just made a fantastic Hello, Dolly reference, and you guys just glossed straight over it. So I just want to... I think we should take a moment, maybe take 10 to 15 minutes to... properly.
Let's just properly enjoy that reference.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be honest. That's not something I remember.
You don't remember me making a reference like 15 seconds ago? Well, your memory is broken.
Super broken.
By the way, you are speaking with Ben Patton.
Who's that?
He's the dude with the accent.
That would be me. Howdy, y'all.
That was a good impression of Joe.
I was about to say, that's a good impression of Steven Taylor doing an American accent.
And the Gunfighters.
There we go.
Wait, was that me or just an American accent in general?
Either or.
Fair enough.
So, yeah, Professor Plum is all, hey, I made this computer, it's called WOTAN, which stands for a bunch of nonsense. They explain that WOTAN is the most advanced computer ever made. And how they're planning on, like, networking everything together, which will probably involve quite a lot of cable and a significant amount of turning things off and on again.
And Dodo doesn't care about any of this and wants to go clubbing?
Yeah, Dodo's like, nah, I'm not interested in this narrative. I'm going to go and take a bunch of drugs and go to a club.
Like, it's an abrupt smash cut to the club, too. It's like, computers. Oh, we also skipped over a little bit. The WOTAN knows of the TARDIS, or at least knows what it stands for.
Dodo's like, oh, if you're so smart, why don't you tell me what TARDIS means? And WOTAN's like, chill, baby bird, I got this. And is like, yeah, time and relative dimension in snacks. That's brilliant. Totally and radically driving in space. What? And everyone's like, damn, that reference isn't even going to be made till 2015. How does he know?
But yeah, computers and WOTAN, and then smash cut to... in the club.
The Inferno Club.
Polly, the secretary, has gone with Dodo because...
to show her a good time?
Basically, yeah.
Fun fact, every nightclub that has ever appeared in an episode of Doctor Who is named after a story from the show's future. A nightclub later appears during the Tom Baker run that is named Revenge of the Cybermen.
Fun facts are my favorite.
They're your favorite because they are largely grossly inaccurate.
They're much better than the truth.
I can't operate on any level of reality. I'm a big fan of nonsense gibberish.
It's like a truth substitute.
It's like an insulin jab, but instead of, you know, keeping your blood sugar level in check and combating the ravaging effects of diabetes, it's just generally misleading you into believing actual bullshit. Actually, it's nothing like an insulin injection in that respect.
I was about to say, you're kind of like my dad. My dad would do that just to fuck with me when I was a kid. Just, like, make up shit. But he was generally good about later telling me, oh, right, that was bullshit.
Oh, you know, your dad and my mum would have gotten along very well. My mum used to love telling people things that were patently false. Like, she told a friend of the family that disposable contact lenses were made of fish scales. Oh, that's not even the best part of the story. My mum did not correct this piece of misinformation until the same friend repeated it back to her 8 years later.
Oh my God, that's so wrong.
Wow. That's similar to
Ben
what happened with
and
my dad.
My dad should form a club because my dad will just make shit up, and my dad says it with such confidence too.
Yeah,
you gotta believe your bullshit. You gotta sell it, and it's easier for me because I live in America now, and obviously I have this accent, and people want to believe what I have to say. There's something where Americans, I think, need to believe a stern, authoritative British accent, which I think may be something that's kind of encoded into your genetics and your DNA from the old days. But
I believe that.
You guys need so strongly to believe the nonsense that me and my kind spout to you on a regular basis. Like, watch an episode of Top Gear. 87% of the things that they say in an episode of Top Gear is literally made up. Top Gear is made by the BBC to fool Americans for our own amusement. That's why the show exists.
See, that's a fact that I totally
believe. I wouldn't
agree
with
you
but
it.
The way you said it, yeah,
right?
I'm like, yeah, I think he's got a point.
It's true. Can I just stress, we have literally been talking now for 51 minutes, and we're still in the first 10 minutes of part one.
We're up in the club.
Named
the
after
club.
The John Pertwee serial from the end of season 7.
And there's a sad man at the end of the bar.
A sad sailor.
That's not a euphemism.
Oh, it is, but not in this case.
And Polly's friend Kitty is also there.
She's the bartender or something, right? She works there.
Oh, yeah, I don't care.
And
about
she's.
Her.
Well, she's the one who tells Polly, it's like, hey, that guy's sad. Go cheer him up. Because we care about him for
because
some reason.
Because we need another companion.
That's it, basically.
I think what it is it's, hey, he's a sailor. You could get some sex, maybe? Or use your body to make his body smile more. I think that's... I really do think that's the implication. It's the 60s, though, in a nightclub. Come on. Read between the lines. The lines in this instance being cocaine.
So she's like, so I heard you like semen, right?
No. It's just too on the nose.
Semen on the nose?
I went to a fancy dress party once and my friend Chris came and he showed up. He was just wearing a condom on his face. And someone said, who are you? And he said, fuck nose.
I don't know whether to believe that or not now because of his accent.
Kitty tells Polly to go and have sex with that sailor. Yeah, and then they try and the sailor's like, meh. And then they're like, all right, screw it. Leave him alone. And that's literally the interaction. That's the entire interaction.
He's too sad. So we're going to leave him alone.
Someone named Flash comes and like, hey, I'm Flash. Hi, how are you today? I'm going to harass the shit out of you. And then that's when the sailor jumps into action. He's like, you can't do that. I don't care if your name is Lord Flashheart, as played by Rick Mayall in the hit series Blackadder. And then it's like, and there's a minor fight. Very briefly, happens very, very quickly. And then Dodo says, thank you. And then the sailor says, no problem. By the way, my name is Ben Jackson. Except he doesn't sound like that. He sounds like, oh, no problem. My name, what would he do? Ben Jackson. He sounds like Dick Van Dyke.
I'm just going to go ahead and say right now, I've seen quite a bit of Ben and Polly. I don't particularly care for them very much.
Well, the good news is they won't be around for long. Ish.
Ben, I liked Polly okay Polly's in this episode. I don't, that's all I have to judge her by.
Ben just seems like a really poor Steven substitute. He's like Steven without a personality.
So Steven then.
I like Steven.
I like Steven too.
Steven's adorable.
So is your face. Oh, Senya Babitsa. Sorry.
Aw, he said my face is adorable.
It is.
Aw. But yeah, I don't know, just Ben, he just seems like not a character. He just does not have anything going on.
Well, he doesn't even have a reason like to continue to be in the story.
Like, he's just sort of there, and he's just like,
I'm just some guy that these people met in a bar, but I'm really invested in what's happening in their lives, because I don't have anything better to do right now.
So, there's a press conference happening about Wotan.
The Royal Scientific Club.
The Royal Scientific Club held a press conference about Wotan. A number of questions from reporters. Sir Charles Summer, head of the Royal Scientific Club, tells those who gathered that Wotan actually thinks and has no political allegiances.
Tony was very confused because she's like, that computer looks smaller, but it was a mop.
No, what I said was, is that supposed to look that small? I'm not certain.
I feel like this press conference was like the equivalent of the episode of the IT Crowd where Jen's made Employee of the Month and they give her the internet. This Jen is the internet.
That's pretty good.
That was pretty good.
I do a mean impression of Moss from the IT Crowd. They call for Professor Brett, who, you know, he's not going to... Why would he be at the press conference? It's not like he invented the bloody computer they're talking about. Why would he be present at the thing? He's heading for the press conference. He calls in Major Green, and Professor Plum says that he's had the feeling all day that someone has been watching and listening to the goings-on in the area. And the Major's like... It's fine. Everything's good. No worries. No worries, mate. Even though he's not Australian, he just says it. It's weird. And then Wotan starts buzzing.
And proceeds to fuck him up.
Yeah, and he's like, I think you're under the mental control of Wotan now. I think that's fine. I think what's happening here, as with all electronics, is if they buzz loud enough, your brain melts.
I really enjoyed the sound of it. I could have done without the, swirly hypnotic overlay.
I like the swirly hypnotic overlay.
The swirly hypnotic, that's how you know this was made in the 60s.
How else are you supposed to know that mind control is happening, Joe?
They do the same thing in Tomb of the Cybermen later with Patrick Troughton.
They do a swirly hypnotic overlay?
They do a swirly hypnotic overlay, yes.
I was in a band called Swirly Hypnotic Overlay.
I was gonna do it.
I have to say, when I was, I used to get bullied a lot in school, and probably one of the worst things they ever did to me was the swirly hypnotic overlay where, you know, they grab you and put your head down the toilet and flush. I really didn't like being swirly hypnotic overlaid.
And they'd also force feed you propaganda while holding you under just to...
Yeah, I mean, I think that's taken the bit too far, and I think we've now kind of, we've lost our connection to the underlying theme of stupid names for innocuous nonsense.
But I wanted it to connect just a little bit more. Just a little bit.
Too late.
So yeah, Wotan's fucking up the professor, And also, Dodo is feeling a little fucked up
Dodo
as well.
Dodo has a headache.
Yes.
At the club. And then she gets a phone call.
They're back at the club. With it's Dodo and Polly and Ben and 50 Cent is there singing that one song that he does. Dodo gets a headache. And then she says, no, actually, I'm fine. And then, like, her face is all... Bleh. Yeah, she's got a headache. And then she goes, her face is like, or did I? We're meant to imply that something sinister is afoot.
The professor goes to the like Royal Scientific Club. There's two clubs here. There's the club and then the scientific club.
Right, not to be confused to with each other.
Yes.
The club is called Inferno and the scientific club is called Destiny of the Daleks. Just to differentiate them. Sorry, no, my apologies. The scientific let's not mislead the audience. The scientific club is of course called the Armageddon Factor. Okay, now you know what, this joke doesn't work. Okay, so the scientific club is called Gridlock.
I thought it was called Love and Monsters.
The scientific club is called Day of the Doctor. The scientific club is called K-9 and Company. The scientific club is called The Wedding of Sarah Jane. The scientific club is called An Unearthly Child. I've gone in the wrong direction. The scientific club is called The Trouble with Tribbles. Anyway, so they go to the other club, the science club. Science club sounds like a Saturday morning, like the TV show that shows all of the Saturday morning cartoons is called Science Club.
I bet that was what the original title for Doctor Who was just
Science Club. Actually, it was called An Adventure in Space and Time, but, you know, whatever. Yeah, so Professor Brett shows up and he's like, hey, how you doing? I'm definitely Professor Brett and not a hypnotized mind person. He doesn't comment to the media and he takes Professor Crimpton aside, who we've not seen before. It's just for some urgent reason. And then Sir Charles is introducing himself to the Doctor. And then the Doctor says, yo, what's up with Crimpton? And Charles is... Crimpton is, quote, their foremost electronic expert and thinks that there's something wrong with Wotan.
There is, so you're not wrong there.
Because Wotan's hypnotizing everything, and the Doctor's like, is this the part where he goes, I wonder, while tapping his tooth?
But, yeah.
Dodo gets a phone call, and on the phone call, it's the machine.
Wotan
has called her and is, like, hypnotizing her through the phone.
So this thing's got powers.
It's got mad skills. She picks up the phone and hears, like 90s dial-up modem.
So is it's just the sound that causes the hypnotization? Because...
And the swirly overlay.
Was there a swirly hypnotic overlay over her on
that one? I think so. It does sound remarkably like that.
It's not the same, but it's kind of in that ballpark.
Yeah, I think Vince should do another...
Remix
for us.
Okay.
With the Wotan noise.
Let's start getting through this episode.
The Wotan.
So the Doctor shows back up at the club to get Dodo? Is that the Inferno Club? Where Dodo is. I don't remember how this episode ends. We're like at the end.
Well, I don't think she's there.
Yes,
She left because she's going to go get hypnotized.
She left?
Or she's been hypnotized into being further hypnotized. You there, minion, come here and be hypnotized. She's like, oh, all right.
Yeah, because she goes there to get her orders. The Doctor's like, where's she at? She'll eventually show back up.
She showed up in Professor Brett's office.
And Wotan gives her orders. And the most infuriating fucking thing in this serial. Wotan says, Doctor Who is required.
It's actually like four times slower than that.
I sped it up a bit.
Doctor Who is not his actual name. It's just the name of the show. That's what he should say.
Yeah. He says it, though, like, four different times, I feel like. Like, it repeats.
And then somebody
else... It's the end of this episode, it's the beginning of the next episode, and it happens later on.
And Professor Brett also calls him Doctor Who at some point. But that could be getting mixed messages from Wotan. Because I theorize...
Oh, my gosh, she spent so long.
I theorize that he's not saying Doctor Who is required, it's Doctor Who is required. Yes.
Well, that's stupid.
It's stupid, but I am willing to go with it.
Does it let you sleep at night?
Yeah. And also, we're saying it's slower, but it's also covered up with, like, the machine noise, so it's also difficult to discern what he is saying.
I mean, let's just chalk it up to the fact that sometimes when production... Like, there's a Third Doctor story that is literally called Doctor Who and the Silurians. And we have to just... No, I know that hurts to hear, but sometimes we just have to accept that these things get through the production process. That's life. You just deal with it. You carry on. KBO.
Nope.
You've got to move on.
Can't do it. I still think it's Doctor who is required.
Well, that doesn't... But within the context and syntax, that doesn't make any goddamn sense.
He is the Doctor who is required.
It's taken us an hour to get through episode one.
That's the end of episode one, though.
We finished a whole fucking episode.
We're now into episode two.
Great, there are four of them, so 4 hours later... Yeah. We'll be done.
We'll be able to get through these a little quicker because, like, it starts to be not much happens.
Yeah. I feel like that's a frequent, like, theme of, like, yeah, this is four episodes, but, like, this whole episode could just not exist.
So, yeah, let's skip to episode three. No, we should probably talk about episode two.
So, they're going to use Dodo to get the Doctor.
And they're going to make mobile machines that are connected to Wotan.
Which is great.
Which are the War Machines, the title of the...
They're big, giant, ugly robots, and I love them with all my heart.
The thing I love about the War Machines is they're very clearly another attempt by the BBC to be like, well, the Daleks were big. Let's do something that isn't owned by Terry Nation. It kind of, it's Dalek-esque. And that's one of the reasons why the First Doctor goes, oh, this reminds me of when the Daleks, because it's clearly, what they're trying to do is set up for the audience that these are like the Daleks, right?
Buy our toys.
Well, at the time, it wasn't so much buy our toys as it was, please don't give us a reason I need to license the Daleks and Terry Nation anymore. They do look like a photocopier gained sentience and wants to destroy mankind.
They look like giant battle bots.
They look more like printers to me. Just angry office printers.
Yeah, they're like very big, angry office printers.
They just have like a mallet on it.
Those are the War Machines.
And they really hate crates.
There's like a whole fucking thing of they're testing them out to like see if they work and stuff. And it's just them destroying crates for a whole montage.
Yeah, and like in anywhere it goes, there's always conveniently crates in its way.
Hey, if you're good at something, you know, you do that thing. They're going to build those the War Machines in London. It's kind of these mobile computers. Green will determine the locations. I'm literally reading from the TARDIS data core here. And then Brett's going to oversee the construction. Crimpton will prepare their programming. And then Crimpton again. Separate from the computer, who can very clearly, you know, we could excuse him saying Doctor Who as a syntax error. Crimpton says that they have to find Doctor Who. Like, he says it very clearly, very plainly.
No, just accept it.
No, okay, because here's the thing.
You're getting ready to fight it.
Because here's the thing.
Just accept it and let it go.
Here's the thing.
Don't try to justify this. Oh, don't do it.
No,
don't do it to yourself.
The computer, Wotan says the Doctor Who is required.
But he wouldn't.
But the professor misheard it as Doctor Who. So there you go. It's all fine. Everything makes sense.
No. This is Doctor Who. The thing you just said about everything making sense will never be true.
No. I'm gonna make it. I'm going to make it be true. Like that one guy
who
writes
those books.
Like if
this is getting to you,
yeah.
I don't know how you're going to deal with like all of Doctor Who.
We're reaching the end of like season three in 1966. Like at a certain point, your entire brain is just going to shut down.
Isn't there a guy who like writes books that are just like, I'm going to make everything make sense?
Like generally or specifically? Because I feel like Stephen Hawking tried to do that with A Brief History of Time.
No. I mean specifically with Doctor Who.
But he just tries to make everything fit together.
Yeah, he like just like takes all the inconsistencies and like writes books
so
that just like explain away the inconsistencies.
What about the Doctor being half human and also being made in a loom?
I don't know, I haven't got that far yet.
Don't get me started on looms. Looms are stupid, but...
Ask me about loom.
I'm pretty sure we might have, like, a listener who would fight you.
There are people who have attempted to fit the Peter Cushing Doctor Who movies into the TV canon. There are people who have attempted to make that work.
Okay, he is literally Doctor Who. That's fine.
So maybe Wotan was like, we need this guy named Doctor who looks a little, but not a lot like Peter Cushing.
Yeah, okay. There's an explanation is all I'm saying.
So Crimpton's all, oh, we need to find Doctor Who. Meanwhile, the Doctor, who is not Doctor Who, is at the Inferno Club until closing time, because that's where old men hang out, apparently.
He's just like, I guess Dodo will come back here.
Well, they're like trying to figure out, should we go look for her or what?
Oh, Ben, Polly, Dodo, watch me twerk. Watch me twerk, Dodo. I can crump. I'm crumping.
I'm done now. I can't continue on. I'm done. This is the end.
Watch me whip. Watch me nay-nay.
He's suddenly turning into, like...
A viner?
Rick. From Rick and Morty.
Morty. Morty. I can't do it. Literally everyone who does an impression of Rick from Rick and Morty starts it off with Morty. Morty.
So Dodo shows up. Dodo shows up. And just like, what's up?
It's like, I have some friends came by who I know, and we went out, but I'm back now, so it's fine.
Polly tags along to the Doctor and Dodo going to Sir Charles's house, which is where the Doctor's staying, because it's not like he lives in a goddamn spaceship that's big on the inside or anything like that.
But there's like a very long
scene
with
like... There's
an
out-of-order sign on the front, so he can't go back in.
There's a very long scene of just unimportant, like, taxi business, where, like, Dodo's trying to get the Doctor to go one way... Like, because she's trying to kidnap him. But there's all this, like, very long scene with the guy who drives the taxi. And it's like, why are we having this very long scene with, like, the guy, there's a guy coming out of the taxi, I think. And it's like, just setting up this homeless guy
that is also going to be in the taxi.
Old man exposition, who lets everyone know where he's staying for the night, despite the fact zero people are interested.
Exactly. And it's just very awkward and like...
Yeah, he's like, yeah, I'm going to stay in an empty warehouse nearby, which, startling, is where Professor Brett is handing out blueprints for what will eventually become the war machines. The homeless man is like, well, I'm gonna get some sleep tonight. He sets off an alarm, and then all of the laborers kind of go to find him, and then he gets surrounded and killed. Like, they just bludgeon him to death.
Yeah, he gets super dead. That was his only role, to let people know that he got super dead.
Hello, I'm going to stay at a nearby warehouse. Whoops, dead. That's his narrative arc. There's no growth.
But also, Polly sets up a lunch date with Ben, despite him lacking a personality.
Being a completely uninteresting human being.
He's a blank slate. I should fuck it.
He frequently calls her Duchess.
Is that a thing, though?
It seemed derogatory. I don't know. I didn't care for it.
It's very sexist. It's super sexist.
I don't like him. That just furthers my fuel for my fire of dislike. Yeah, so then the Doctor reads about the dead homeless guy.
The very next morning, despite the fact the homeless man went to bed that night and was murdered that night. It's already in the paper.
And also, why would you write about the murder of
only time that's ever made the paper.
Yeah.
The only time the murder of a homeless person makes it into the paper is when it's to further the narrative of a person who doesn't have to sleep in a tin can. That's the fact of it. The Doctor's like, hey, look at this paper. And Sir Charles is like, meh.
And like, they're all buddy-buddy now. Like, they've met once.
But they're best friends.
And then two of the people from Science Club, from Club the Talons of Weng Xiang, quit the job. They're donezo and can't be... they've gone missing. They've absolutely vanished. And then Polly shows up and says that Major Green had called her and sent her to assist Sir Charles because Professor Plum didn't need her for the day. And I guess Sir Charles' secretary, who we haven't really seen much of at this point, is ill, which I guess means we don't want to pay this actress anymore. Or did we ever have an actress? I don't know. Anyway, here's a narrative reason for this character to be here.
Right, I think they just needed Polly.
We need peak Polly so that the audience are used to her, so when she stows away on the TARDIS, we aren't shocked by her continued presence.
Dodo is trying to get the Doctor to go to Wotan.
Dr.
Wotan
who?
Calls the Doctor, gives him a little ringy dingy.
And tries to kind of hypnotize him that way, but it
doesn't work.
Because he's a human from the future with one heart.
Named Doctor Who.
Named Doctor...
Whom is it?
Doctor Stephen Whom.
And Dodo's like really confused, like, why didn't that work? And then like the Doctor's like, you're being really weird.
What's the deal here? Dodo thinks that the Doctor was successfully hypnotized and tries to give him instructions. And the Doctor's like, no. That's when the Doctor is all, hey, you need to literally stop being the dumbest person I've ever met. And Dodo's like, oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. I was hypnotized the entire time.
He deprograms her by, like, waving his ring in her face.
It's a special ring. It's a push pop. Sorry, ring pop. I always get those two mixed up.
And then she falls asleep, and he's like, ah, she'll be fine. She needs to sleep for a couple of days.
She needs to sleep
fucking gone.
For a couple of days and then never come back.
She never again. I don't understand. She just vanished. She's gone. She went to a special farm where companions go to, and she had lots of room to run and play with the other companions and live a long and happy life.
It's the most
unceremonious of just like, this character is... It's not...
It's done now.
Yeah, like, we're done with her.
Can you imagine modern Who doing that? Just be like, oh, I need to lie down. and then we just never see that companion again at the end of the episode. Oh, she's done. She's not coming.
She's got a headache.
she's got a headache and she's not coming back.
Every companion we've had that has left the show has at least had some sort of, like...
Send-off.
Yeah, and this, nothing.
Susan gets, one day, I shall come back. Yes, I shall come back. And Dodo gets... She fell asleep and didn't wake up and just went to another place, and we don't see her again, and no acknowledgement of her continued existence.
Tony is like, because, like, spoilers, at the end of the episode, it's like, oh yeah, she's staying with
She
people.
Sends her love. She does. She wants to stay. She tells Polly to tell the doctor that. And I was like, I imagine that she just got, like, kidnapped by aliens, and she was like, well, the doctor will figure it out. He'll come rescue me.
I kind of wonder if Dodo's departure has been expanded upon, like, some of the expanded universe stuff. Because she just vanishes halfway through this serial, and we never see her again.
There's so much about Dodo that she just shows up, too. Like, she goes in the same way she goes out, where she's just like, hi, I just wandered in here. See, and Steven's kind of like, you don't realize what you've done. You can't go see your family. Like, we can't get you back. And she's like, I don't really have friends or family. It's fine. And she's just fine with whatever happens, and she just wanders in and then wanders off.
It's kind of poetic in that way, but it also infuriates me. It also seems really kind of crappy.
A picture of Dodo is on the board at the Black Archive in The Day of the Doctor. The suggestion, according to the TARDIS wiki, the Doctor Who wiki on Wikia, is that after UNIT was established, they brought Dodo in for an interview and then erased her memory of the interview. Another account suggests, and this is in the book Who Killed Kennedy, is that Dodo suffered, quote, severe and recurrent psychiatric problems as a result of having been controlled by Wotan. Shuttled from hospital to hospital, she was eventually sent to the Glass House, where she was interrogated brutally by its director, the Master, about the Doctor.
What?
No, it gets worse.
Oh, God,
it gets
no.
worse. She got dumped out on the street, was homeless for a while, and then fell in love with a journalist named James Stevens, who was investigating UNIT. Dodo dies, I guess. She was murdered by a former UNIT soldier.
How did her life get so dark?
And then the second or seventh incarnation of the Doctor, it's unclear which one, attends Dodo's funeral.
That's even worse than what happened in the episode.
I don't know how to deal with this new information.
Shit.
I actually now wish that I hadn't read that, and that her departure was just, yeah, she's staying. She's just going to stay here.
Right. At least she was like, oh, well, I decided I'm going to stay and everything's fine. Like, she leaves and her life gets shitty.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely terrible. Like, she gets beaten up by the Master, kicked out onto the street, and then is homeless, and then murdered.
What?
Fuck!
Why?
Wow.
Yay!
We should have just left it. We wanted more, and we were wrong.
My soul hurts now. So then we get a war machine montage of it training.
And against crates.
Against crates. Learning how to be the best war machine that it can be.
The very best.
Like no war machine ever was.
Thank you.
You're welcome. To catch Doctor Who is my real test. To hypnotize him is my cause. I will travel across the land searching far and wide. Teach Doctor Who to understand the power that's inside Wotan. Gotta kill them all. Yeah, so the Doctor sends Ben to investigate the area around the club to see if they can find any information.
And that's where he thinks he's been stood up, because Polly has gone to Brett's.
And then Ben goes around outside the Inferno Club, overhears Major Green's testing of Wotan's machine, the war machines, and then goes inside the warehouse and then watches the war machine. And this is interesting, because the war machine doesn't destroy a crate in the scene. He destroys a table. Very structurally different from a crate.
But then proceeds to pile drive through a stack of crates to get to Ben. And then they do a shot that's very reminiscent of Barbara at the end of the Daleks. That's a great shot. And this is a pretty good shot, but it's not as good. But it's...
Much like the war machines. They're not the Daleks.
They're not the Daleks, but they're trying so hard.
You know, I appreciate the effort.
And that's the end of episode two.
So on to episode three, which picks up exactly where we left off, with Ben backed up against a wall of boxes.
Really, that's what the war machine was trying to get to.
The boxes. Ben's inconsequential to this entire thing, which is true of most Bens in most situations. I find I'm usually superfluous, and usually someone's using me to get to a crate.
Not because they love crates, because they hate crates.
They want to see them destroyed.
So Ben makes it to a door, the war machines set off an alarm, and then Major Green gets all of the laborers there to find the unknown trespasser, and Ben ducks out and finds Polly in the entryway. And it turns out Polly's been hypnotized.
Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum. arm, and then Polly locks up Wotan. Oh, not Wotan. No, let's start that sentence again. Polly
wants a cracker.
Polly wants a cracker, and the only way to get that cracker is by locking Ben into the warehouse and capturing him.
Though later she will also rescue Ben. So, I mean, in a way, she is rescuing him from, like, death, I feel like, right? Like, there's,
she's
like,
saving him from himself.
Like, there's this, like, theme of, like, that she's still her, so it's like she's trying
she
to...
She has a certain amount of...
Of control.
Yeah.
And she likes Ben for some reason.
Because she's a big old dummy-dum-dum.
Because he called her a duchess, and...
Nothing's more romantic than that.
Nothing's more romantic than patriarchal condescension. Or patriarchal condensation, which is also pretty hot.
But yeah, they put Ben to work moving crates.
They don't hypnotize him, though.
No.
They just leave him unhypnotized.
And they're like, this'll go well.
I don't think they realize that there's anything wrong with their poorly thought out, structurally unsound plan, because that's what Doctor Who villains are like in the 60s. They're very, we will take over the world. Why? We'll figure that out later. Like, they don't really think things through, and I love that.
Wotan has a motive, right? Which is that Earth cannot progress with humans.
Like, with human beings in charge.
Humanity is a bad thing for the Earth.
But yeah, it's run its course, and it's time for machines to take over.
So basic computers taking over the world plot in general, so...
But, like, not really.
Humans bad, computers good. That's generally how it goes.
I just mean this is, like, a relatively early-ish rendition of that.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot of things I'm like, well, that's an old cliche. But then I'm like, well, this is old, so maybe it's not as cliche.
How old is that cliche at this point?
Yeah, how cliched is it at this point? Is this something innovative at the time?
And here's the thing, this isn't even the most Skynet thing that Doctor Who's ever done. That actually comes much later during the third Doctor's tenure, during the story Day of the Daleks. That whole story is the Terminator. It's that first Terminator movie, but with Daleks instead of Skynet. Not even kidding.
Now I'm ready to get to that.
Something for you to look forward to. 4 hours later, and just arbitrarily, the Doctor's like, I wonder if I should be worried about Ben. It has been 4 hours. Maybe something's up. So Charles says, well, you know, we can't postpone C-Day. Have we said what C-Day is yet? I don't know what C-Day is. Is that the launch for Wotan? I don't know.
Yes. Yes?
We can't postpone C-Day, and the police can do their job. It's fine. But the Doctor is worried that police intervention is just going to make Wotan more surreptitious, which is a fancy way of saying sneaky. Kind of like how when you call out racists for being racist, they don't stop being racist, they just get more sly about their racism. But with a robot and a computer instead of racism. It's allegorical.
Oh, and then we have a scene where I think there's like one of the dudes that they're like packing up crates and stuff at the warehouse. One of them gets tired and sort of like, I gotta stop. And they're like, you can't stop. And I think they like kill him or something, and he just falls down to the ground. And then the war machine pushes his body away. But it's clearly just the actor rolling. Like,
love it. Is this the same scene where Ben goes to say, hey, Polly, thank you for saving my skin earlier. And Polly's like, what are you talking about? I am a hypnotized. Because Ben thinks that Polly's faking it. Which is the only time only time in human history that a man has thought a woman is faking it and is pleased about that. And Polly's like, no, I'm totes hypnotized, y'all, because that's how she rolls. And then Professor Plum and Professor Crimpton, who I'm going to start calling Professor Krull after the science fiction movie of the late 70s, early 80s that is not very good, is all, yeah, we should be done by probably noon tomorrow, we're good. And they talk a little bit about how the war machines work and what they're for. Ben, like, goes to make a run for it.
Yeah, he escapes.
Yes.
Polly sees him, and instead of setting off the alarm, Polly does nothing and goes back to moving boxes. So maybe there's something inside after all. And then Ben's out.
She kind of gets in trouble for it, and they send her, like, back to get punished.
My note literally says, Polly in trouble with Disney, because that guy looks so much like Walt Disney.
That's Major Green, yeah. He does have a certain, like, Tony Stark's dad look about him.
Yeah. He's going to send Polly to Wotan for punishment.
So then Ben shows up at Sir Charles's place, and he's like, there's a killer machine! And Sir Charles is like, no, I don't think that doesn't sound believable or plausible in any way. So Charles is about to call the police, and the Doctor's like, maybe something bigger's happening, and maybe we should actually look into it, and maybe the police can't help. Like, a proper, like, action hero kind of fashion suggests actually going after Wotan, and so Charles says, no, that's dumb. There's nothing to connect this to Professor Brett, even though Polly is definitely hypnotized.
And Dodo as well. Dodo was very clearly hypnotized.
But she doesn't exist anymore. She stepped out of the mind's eye and therefore out of sight, out of mind. She no longer exists. So it's like that episode of Star Trek The Next Generation where Beverly Crusher's trapped in that warp bubble that gets smaller and smaller and people keep vanishing. It's that. Your next podcast should be the Star Trek Watchathon of Rassilon, just a heads up.
It's a goal.
It's a stretch goal for our Patreon. The Watchathon of Khan.
I would call it Star Trek The Next Watchathon, but what do I know? So, the Doctor and Ben, who I just need to reiterate for listeners who are easily confused, that's not me. I wasn't in this serial. This serial aired 20 years before I was born. So, it's not me. So, the Doctor and Ben, knowing that they've upset Sir Charles, they're just like, okay, well, we'll just do our own thing. And so Charles, who had previously been like, I'm going to call the police, actually thinks, you know what? I'm going to call the Ministry of Defense instead. So they will send the army. He went from, I'm not that concerned, but let's call the cops, to, I'm slightly concerned, let's call the army. And then Sir Charles goes to the warehouse by himself.
And then this is the point in the show where it starts to not feel like Doctor Who anymore. And it's just army and wars people and stuff. Like, the Doctor and Ben and Polly are not in the episode for, like, so long at this point.
I kind of tuned out because it is just, like, the army versus the war machines. And it's like, all right, this is still happening.
It's like war stuff and army stuff. And
yeah, so Charles and the army show up at the neighborhood with the around the warehouse. And they find, and again, I'm quoting from the TARDIS data core here, considerable electrical and radio activity coming from the warehouse. And so the commanding officer sends Orange Patrol to enter the warehouse. Major Green gets tipped off because they get radio interference in their own radio signals, and he lets the labourers know. And then Orange Patrol rushes the war machines, or maybe they don't. I know that there's some kind of conflict.
War stuff happens.
War stuff. Orange Patrol are exiting the warehouse. They have to retreat, so they pull back. The weapons are useless against war machine. That's how you know this is 60s sci-fi. Our weapons are useless against them. And then the Doctor and Ben
finally show up.
Because I guess they had to stop at like a cold stone on the way. It's like, Chocolate Devotion. Let's get ourselves some like Love It sized Chocolate Devotion. I've got one of those cards. Like, I'm due for a freebie. So they're like, they stop and get some ice cream. And then
I was saving it for Dodo, but
she doesn't exist anymore.
So the Doctor shows up with like chocolate and like little brownie pieces around his mouth and wipes it away. And they show up and ask Sir Charles, what's the dealio? And then Orange Patrol rushes around the corner and the war machines are still chasing after them. The leader of Orange Patrol reports that the machine nearly wiped them out as it comes around the corner to interview. The war machines approach the Doctor in another shot that is very reminiscent of that first ever cliffhanger from the Daleks. It's like they really like that shot. They're really trying to... It's the BBC going, see? They're like the Daleks. They are like the Daleks. They are. They are. They are.
The difference is, generally, it's like the machine coming toward you and they're like... But this time it's everybody's running away, the machine's coming, but the Doctor like walks forward.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Oh, the Doctor looks so badass in that scene. He's got his hat on and he's got his hands on his jacket in that way that he does, where it looks like he's about to pull it off to reveal the Superman logo. And he's super defiant, and I love it.
That's the end of episode 3, and we go into episode 4, and they redo that shot. But less effectively.
That is how they did the cliffhangers back in the day. Now they just repeat the footage at the beginning of the episode, like the last like 30 seconds to a minute of the previous episode. But the way that they would do it back in the day was they would literally reshoot it, because they were taping it as live. As anyone who has watched the marvelous docudrama An Adventure in Space and Time would know.
We haven't watched that yet.
You need to watch it! Oh my god! When you finish the Hartnell era, the first thing you have to watch and do a watchathon of Rassilon 4 is An Adventure in Space and Time. After you finish watching The Tenth Planet, that should be the next episode you do. Because it recounts the production of the Hartnell... Anyway, episode 4. So, War Machine...
But I want to say, like, the difference is, in the end of episode 3, everybody runs away and leaves the Doctor standing there and he walks forward. And then when they recap it at the beginning of episode 4, they sort of just back up a little bit. And the Doctor walks forward, and everybody's still there.
They're a lot less committed.
Yeah. They're like, oh, wait, we actually have to be in this episode.
I mean, this is an early example of Doctor Who cheating the cliffhanger, where they would show the cliffhanger and make it very overt, like, this is a life and death scenario. This is it. And then when they would do the recap, they would change something. Like, I remember a cliffhanger, I think it's from The Deadly Assassin, where you see the Doctor in the Matrix, by the way, in the Gallifreyan Matrix on Gallifrey, on a minecart that crashes into a well, and then he falls down the well and dies. And then in the recap at the beginning of the following episode, he doesn't fall down the well. At all. It just doesn't happen. That's something that Doctor Who did very occasionally in the classic series. They would cheat the cliffhanger, and this is a very early example of that. Because what happens is, Ben tries to pull the Doctor away, and the Doctor's like, no, I'm good here, thanks, I'm good, I'm set. And then the War Machine is like, actually, and then just goes around the Doctor, so there's no actual menace. It just stops moving because the radar dish stops.
I was calling him the Robo Whisperer at this point, because the Doctor's like dancing around it and like checking it out and stuff.
It needs like river dance music, like Irish, you know, little flutey music, like Captain Picard off to the side playing that tune that he used to play on his little flute. So it cuts to a television report in a pub.
Yeah. Yes, why does that happen?
Reporting on how the War Machine's been put out of action, despite the fact there's been no previous footage of national coverage of this thing. Like, the last thing we saw in the news was homeless man murdered, and now it's War Machine. And the report says that there will be more attacks like this the following day.
The news reporting in this universe is really fast.
It just goes. It's just straight up. I mean, this is pre-broadband, pre-iPhone footage, and they straight up have this information. I think Wotan is leaking information, like WikiLeaks.
Basically, there's a second location for the mobile War Machines, and that's about to go operational.
There's a whole bunch of them, isn't there? Like, they're strategically placed.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of different
War Machines.
It's a very rare example of a setup from earlier in the episode paying off, because they do say, like Professor Plum does state earlier in the episode, oh, we're going to set up several locations for this. This is the payoff for that. Like, even though that one warehouse may be out of commission, there are others. And then the Doctor decides to examine the War Machine.
Ben's, like, super worried about finding Polly, and the Doctor's just like, I don't give a shit. Look at this giant machine.
But also, Ben has, like, very little reason to be super worried about Polly.
Except I mean, besides that he wants the fact to that, get in her pants.
Like, she's a human being, and you should be worried for other human beings. But, like, it's like there's a supposed relationship there, but that
it's
isn't
not
really there.
Established very well.
It's like, you don't really know her, or even what's going on at all.
I think he's...
You could just go home.
So, the Doctor examined that one War Machine.
And he dropped something that I didn't know what it was until the very end.
What was it? It was the TARDIS key.
Yeah, TARDIS
yes.
key. Ben picks it up.
And instead of giving it back to the Doctor, just goes away.
As one does, yeah. So the Doctor, he's decoded the programming, determined that if it had been allowed to complete its test, which it had failed previously, but if it had been allowed to complete the test, it would have been nearly unstoppable. And then also decodes and determines that there's like 11 more units of the machine as opposed to UNIT, the United Nations Intelligence Task Force, which doesn't exist yet. There's 11 more War Machines in like the 30-mile radius around London, and they're all going to begin an attack at noon. What they will attack is delightfully vague, but they will attack it. They're going to attack the shit out of it.
Where are they going to attack? It's a crate.
It's a crate factory.
Must destroy all crates.
Bullock & Sons Crate Manufacturing Incorporated, a division of Zaibatsu Pharmaceuticals.
What do you think they deliver their crates in?
Barrels. So, Professor Plum and everyone, they're testing the second War Machine. They accidentally kill one of the people being testers, that he gets blasted by the War Machine's weaponry. And then back at the tower, Professor Plum, or Professor Brett, I've lost track of who's who now, notices that contact with the second War Machine has broken down, which suggests that the machine has gone rogue. And then Crimpton, who is also a professor, goes to correct the programming, which is obviously going to work out really well for everyone involved.
And then I've got a note that says Disney gets unhypnotized.
Yeah, Major Green was brought outside the warehouse, and that's when the Doctor's like, oh, it's Disney, it's Walt Disney. Let me unhypnotize him, because he doesn't recognize that when Major Green is talking to the Doctor, he doesn't recognize the Doctor and doesn't recognize the War Machines. Eventually, he's led away by the army for medical assistance. And then Sir Charles really, like, he's super intent on, like, raiding Post Office Tower and getting Professor Plum, but the Doctor's like, you can't do that. That's too aggressive. The strong arm methods are not super ideal, guys. Come on, like, think this through. The army minister, Minister of Defense, says, "Yeah, let's turn to this old man I've never seen before for more advice and suggestions."
Everyone one really trusts the doctor in the serial. Everyone's just like, yeah, whatever you say, computer expert. We'll trust you on how we should defend ourselves against killer robots.
And then number 9 is online and on the streets.
Number 9 is the...
Oh, he kills that guy in the phone box.
Yeah.
Thanks for agreeing with me about a thing that happened in the episode.
Sure, I remember that very clearly.
And then the next bit of news coverage about the war machine invasion is on the radio advising people to stay off those streets and not confront the machines.
And then we get more of Ben being worried about Polly and the doctor not giving a shit. Then the doctor's like, if we give the machine a cold...
That's basically it. Like, let's disease this bad mama jamma.
It was Independence Day before Independence Day.
I mean, Jeff Goldblum is in this story. Little known fact.
Yeah, he's Professor Plum.
I thought he played the homeless man.
He played both. He's very versatile.
He did both, like Dick Van Dyke in Mary Poppins. We're skipping forward a little bit. The Doctor wants to trap a war machine
with like a wrestling ring.
Yeah, it looks like a really lazily put together boxing ring in the middle of nowhere. They basically wrap it in this cable in a kind of a boxing ring configuration. The war machine doesn't get shut down. Like, the wires are conducting a magnetic field. The war machine doesn't get shut down, but the doctor does get close enough to shut it down manually. That gives him a fully functional war machine to kind of pick apart and figure out how it works properly.
Very reminiscent of the, static electricity thing.
For the Daleks.
The Daleks.
So the minister from the Ministry of Defense and Sir Charles, who'd previously been, you know what, let's let this old man make the decisions, suddenly change their mind. And have decided that he's not being quick enough about it. The doctor shows up and is like, no, it's fine, I've reprogrammed the thing. Ben flicks the switch, and then the war machine wakes up and starts heading back towards Post Office Tower. And that's when Ben is all, hey, I'm still really concerned about...
Polly.
That no one else has expressed any concern about the only remaining female character in this narrative. And it's the 60s. This is not going to end well for her. So he rushes off to go to the Post Office Tower, hopefully getting there before the war machine so that he can rescue her. And the doctor's like, that's really not a great idea, because this being the 60s, he doesn't care about women. And then the minister's sitting in his car, and the doctor kind of explains to him...
It was very weird seeing the doctor in a car for some reason.
I can't remember. Was he driving or...
Or no, he was in the back seat with... But it was just very weird just seeing him in a car at all. I feel like that's the first time he's ever been in a motor vehicle.
For so much of, like, Ian and Barbara, it's like they couldn't go back to that time because...
Otherwise, they just stay there.
Right. The whole thing was that they wanted to get home. And so now suddenly they're in what is, like, present day... And you're like, oh, this is...
Excuse me, 4 days in the future.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're like, oh, I'm not used to this at all. Because really, for, you know, as long as we've been watching, they've only been, and they're like, what, a couple of episodes? So yeah. It was weird to see him, yeah, like being in a car and interacting with normal Earth things.
Yeah. I feel like we have a whole doctor of that coming up.
It won't be weird at all.
So yeah, so the war machine arrives at Post Office Tower. Ben arrives... also, and sees Polly working on a computer, literally drags Polly out of the office and down the hall. And then that's when the war machine gets out of the elevator and wrecks everyone's shit.
I feel like the war machine would have went over the weight limit for the elevator.
We don't know how much we don't have any concept of how heavy the war machine is.
Yeah, but it's the 60s, so I'm...
It's a guy in a cardboard box, okay? It weighs about the size of a man plus one cardboard box. So yeah, the doctor, Sir Charles, and the minister from the Ministry of Defense eventually show up. Professor Brett does that thing where he grabs his own head and then comes with, but he's forgotten everything. He's back to normal, dehypnotized, but he has no memory of what had happened.
There was no unswirly hypnotic overlay.
We didn't get to see the swirly in reverse, so how do we know? And then the doctor, Sir Charles, and the minister from the Ministry of Defense step out the elevator, see Wotan has had his shit wrecked, and Professor Brett's like, what happened? And Sir Charles is like, oh, the doctor, and turns to the doctor, and the doctor's like Batmaned out of the room, like he's not there anymore. Which brings us to the end of the story. We return to the TARDIS and the out of order sign still hanging on the door.
And the doctor is pissed that, like, Dodo has not showed up.
Wait a second. The door is locked because he doesn't have his key. So he locked it.
No, he has a spare, I guess.
But I'm saying he locked it and then put an out of order sign on it.
It's a double safety thing.
It's a fail safe.
Yeah.
Listen, we're we're arguing the logic of something that happened during the first Doctor's tenure that never appeared. Like, Wotan during this episode says that the Doctor has the human brain that he requires.
It's not the first time that he's been referred to as human either, so.
But they've also, it's also been established that they're, he's that they from a different aliens. Planet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess they could just be like, if you're from the future, you're humans from the future, we just are on a different planet.
So yeah, the doctor says, yeah, I'm just gonna wait for Dodo, and Polly says, no, Dodo's done, she's not gonna be in the next serial. And the Doctor's like, oh, all right, cool, whatever, I guess that
never coming back, she sends her love.
He's a little pissed about it.
Yeah, he's like, all right, fine, you know, fuck her then, and she's not gonna like say a proper goodbye. Like, if her contract was up partway through this serial, I think she would have said something two episodes ago, but whatever. He goes into the TARDIS, and Ben and Polly start walking away, and Ben's like, oh god, no, I've still got that key. We've got to get back to him. So rather than just like knocking on the door and be like, okay, here's your key, bye, they use the key, go into the TARDIS, and then it vanishes, and that's the end of the story.
Yay!
We made it to the end of the story.
Oh my god, we did it.
What is the moral of the war machines, other than technology will wreck your shit?
Have a severe hatred for crates. It's a message of intolerance.
I think that the message of this story is actually love and respect your crates, because you'll never know when they'll be taken from you by a megalomaniacal machine designed by a guy in a post office.
I think it's don't talk to sad people at bars. They're going to end up as your companion, and you're stuck with them for the next couple of serials.
I think the real moral of this story, from Dodo's perspective, is look, if you don't want to hang with someone anymore, you don't owe them an explanation. Just leave. You can cut. If someone isn't adding anything to your life, just cut them out, you know? You don't need to justify yourself to them. If you don't want to hang out with them anymore, you don't want to be in touch with them, just stop. Fuck them.
Yeah.
I actually think that's solid life advice.
I've written Dear John letters to friends. I'm like, hey, we can't be friends anymore because we bring out the worst in each other. You know, we've all been there.
If you've got to, pull a Dodo.
That's the t-shirt for next year when you guys are at Gallifrey 1. You can hand out free t-shirts to say, if you've got to, pull a Dodo.
You can't see my video, the video. But,
he's showing it to you.
I'm currently wearing a t-shirt right now that previous guest Chris Cherry made for me that says, Barbara Wright, always right.
I love it. Except she's not here anymore. Yeah, deal with it.
Though apparently RTD has sort of made up this weird, like, she's immortal.
No, that never happened because it's stupid.
But let's do it. Let's get into
final thoughts.
Ben, what are your final thoughts?
War Machine is the War Machines, because there are indeed more than one in this story. All of the War Machines, except War Machine 2, which can die in a fire.
I think it did die in a fire, and you should feel bad for saying that.
I have no remorse. I have no guilt. I don't have the glands for it. This has always been one of my favorite First Doctor stories. It's got wonderful pacing. The Doctor is ruthless in his decision to reprogram one of the War Machines to just basically destroy Wotan rather than try to reason with it, which is a little out of character. But, you know, I think for the style of story that they're telling, I really enjoy it. I think it has a wonderful tempo and tone. I think if you are a fan of modern Doctor Who and you want an exposure to, like, old school Doctor Who from the 60s, this is a great story to sit down and watch, because it's about the same length of time as, you know, like a two-parter from the modern era, and it just has a really swift pace about it. It does have some clunky stuff, like Dodo's departure is not adequately explained. There are a couple of clunky scenes here and there, including old man exposition who gets murdered. But I really enjoy this one. Like, this is one of my favorite First Doctor stories. Like, this and the Time Meddler are two of my all-time favorites. Do you guys grade stories? Do I have to give this a grade?
You can if you want.
We don't, but you can.
Yeah.
I give this 5.
Just 5?
5's a good number.
5's all you need.
As the Beatles famously sang, all you need is 5. All you need is 5. All you need is 5. 5 is all you need. Sorry, all you need is 5. 5. Shit, I fucked it up. Sorry.
My final thoughts. Okay, so yeah, I feel like, yeah, if you are looking for something more like Modern Who, this is good. But having, like, just, you know, we've been going through this and sort of, you get, like, in this groove of how the show is and stuff. And then suddenly, this episode is kind of way different. Not necessarily bad, but I do feel like it didn't really concentrate on the main characters enough. There was a lot of scenes that happened without either the Doctor or Ben and Polly, even though... And that's another thing, I don't really care for Ben and Polly that much. Polly's okay. Polly gets a bad rap for me.
You really don't like Ben.
Yeah, because I don't like Ben.
Dude, I'm right here.
Yeah, I don't know why we invited you to this episode.
We've been regretting it for like 2 hours now.
I feel like he's just a poor version of Steven. And also he makes this like gargoyle face all the time. I don't know.
Yeah, he looks like someone cast a spell on a statue. and made it come to life, but his face sometimes like defaults to this gnarled, like subhuman.
Oh no!
It's true though. He's always like, ah.
I'll be honest with you. Ben is one of my least favorite companions, which is a shame because, you know, he's my namesake. Like we share a name. I want to like him, but he's just unpleasant.
He really is. And yeah, I don't like the way they drop Dodo. And like, yeah, the Doctor does seem a little out of character. And also, like I said, he's just not, they're not in it much. And there's just
he's
a lot
in
of
it enough to be
war stuff. But like, yeah, it does feel a lot like Modern Who, especially like with like some of like the newer stuff where like the people know the Doctor. Like, I feel like
he just shows up and
he's
in charge.
Like, yeah, you know, like Churchill or whatever is like, what's up, Doctor?
It's very much like the Matt Smith era of Doctor Who, where there's like season five, like almost everyone he met knew who he was.
Yeah, exactly. That's what this feels like. Whereas this is the first time we've had anything.
Can I
like
be
that.
Honest, though? I wasn't super fond of that. I mean, like, in it's like a five? Personal preference. It's, for some reason, I didn't like it. I mean, like, sometimes I did, but like at other times, I was like, I don't care for like everyone always knowing who he is.
That's understandable.
I like sometimes him showing up and, like, you know, people not knowing that he's clever and him having to sort of prove it. And also, you know, people willing to take him down a peg.
The modern show uses that more frequently in part because, they're telling complete stories in 42 minutes as opposed to the classic series where they'll be telling stuff over 6, 8, 10, sometimes 12, dare I say 14 half-hour episodes, which is one of the reasons why the Doctor has the psychic paper. Like, he needs to be able to quickly convince people. And stories where he encounters people he already knows is a very quick way of, like, generating that trust between the Doctor and whoever he's talking to. And the classic Doctor Who does do that more a little bit in places, particularly during the UNIT era with John Pertwee. But this is really, like, one of the first instances of, oh, yeah, you're the Doctor. Yeah, you're cool. We trust you for no reason whatsoever. It's a little jarring, and it's not the kind of thing that holds up, I think, to scrutiny if you sit and examine the narrative. I still think this is a really fun story, and it's a fun, even though as an attempt to recreate the success of the Daleks, it doesn't work. I think as a story in its own right, I still enjoy it. Like, I, for all its flaws, for all its sloppy mismanagement of exposition, I think this works really well. I enjoy it. So shut up.
I like it. I just it is a little bit jarring. Is what I'm saying. And I don't like Ben. There is a lot to like about it. It does have a more modern tone, and I do like the tone. I even like the war stuff as what it is. I don't know if I necessarily like it as Doctor Who, but I like it for what it is, like what it's trying to do. The army stuff works on its own thing. I don't know if it necessarily works as a Doctor Who story, for at least from this time period.
Right.
How would you grade it, keeping in mind that I gave it 5?
I'd give it pants.
That's not even a number.
Right, I feel like you just said a word.
If you're not going to use the grading system properly...
All right, fine.
If you're not going to take this seriously...
Mustard?
Better, thank you.
Okay. Tony, time for your final thoughts.
I will say, I agree that it's like a good... Like, if you wanted to start someone off on watching Classic Who, this would be like a good one. Like, yeah, you could watch... You can watch one era things and enjoy them. It's something that you could get someone into them. I don't think...
I would give them Gunfighters first, but...
I was going to say, I don't think it's a particularly good showcase of, like, the characters of the era. Specifically with, like, Ben and Polly, which is a little ridiculous. You should be using this episode to sort of introduce these characters, and then they don't do much, and they're not really in it. Like, it's a good story on its own. I'm not sure how good of, like, a Doctor Who story it is.
And it's definitely not a good introduction to companions or a good
That's what I'm
goodbye
saying.
To a it's companion.
It's like good to get people to watch it because it definitely has like way better pacing. The storytelling's better than a lot of one era stories, but it doesn't give you a good sense of who the Doctor is and who the companions are. And that for me is what's fun. I'd probably pick...
You're talking about Edge of Destruction.
Edge of Destruction. But I'm weird, and no one likes Edge of Destruction but me. But it's probably my favorite.
Well, I mean, that's because you're a strange human being with odd taste.
I am.
So, what do you grade?
I'd give it a B.
So, the scores are 5, mustard, and B. Is that B as in the letter, or B as in AB?
Both.
It's a BB.
Wait, do you mean AB? Like the first two letters of the alphabet?
No. As in a bee, as in a bumblebee, as in a honeybee.
Or as in Britta in Community is a GDB.
No, that's the other bee.
That's the other one.
We don't appreciate that kind of language on this podcast.
Fuck, I'm sorry.
It's all right, don't let it fucking happen again, piece of shit.
God damn you guys.
Damn shit.
Shut the fuck up.
bastards, the lot of you.
No.
Oh, God, no!
What?
For the love of God, I hope you bleep that.
Jesus Christ.
All right.
I'm sorry.
Why are you always gonna make it weird?
I don't know. Okay, so before we wrap this up, I want to do one, this feature I've been trying to install, and I feel Ben will be great at this.
Oh, yes! Ben will be particularly good at this
okay.
thing.
So,
right, don't build it up or anything. Don't build me up. Great, lovely.
It's a little segment that doesn't have a title, but I'm calling How Would You Reimagine the Serial If It Was Done in Modern Who?
Good title.
I Peter Capaldi would be the Doctor.
Good start.
Dodo's departure would be the last half hour of the second episode, because it'd be two-parter, obviously. They'd wrap up the threat against the Earth in the first 15 minutes, and the remaining 30 minutes would be angsty, stretched out, sad, tears in the rain departure as Dodo's like, oh, we can never see each other again. I mean, the War Machines would probably be a little bit sleeker, a little bit faster. It'd probably be played by people on those hoverboards wrapped in cardboard. I would have the Doctor actually try to negotiate with Wotan first. I feel like that's something he would try to do, try to talk sense into Wotan. Because Wotan is a computer and a computer can be reprogrammed, so I think that would be my first approach for the Doctor, rather than having the Doctor be all, okay, let's just blow him up. Let's just blow him up. That's how modern... Because modern Doctor Who really does emphasize diplomacy over combat first. It's like a reverse RPG when you're in a combat situation. It lets you talk before you take your, you know, combat action. That's probably how it would go. And I mean, I think that, again, the pacing in that first episode is fantastic. And I wouldn't change much from that, to be honest. The music would also be louder.
Probably more jokes and less sailors. Or more sailors.
More, no, throw in more. Go for it.
Yeah, just like a whole bunch of sailors.
Oh, actually, you know what? Inferno would be a gay bar.
Yes!
You wouldn't need to change the name of the bar either.
We did an episode.
Yay. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to this particular episode of the Watchathon of Rassilon. I'd like to thank my guests, Joseph and Tony.
Thanks for having us.
No problem.
Before we end, anything you want to plug?
I want to plug myself. I'm a stand-up comedian. I'm a writer. I am about to start a monthly sci-fi comedy audio play podcast that will be released for free, one episode a month. We did the first episode in September, and then that gas leak that's happening here in California affected my co-producer, so we had to put things on hold for a minute. But we will be starting up again in March, and that's called Jump Leads. You can find that at jump-leads. That's jump-leads.com. And you can find me online at benpadden.net or on Twitter as @benpadden. PADDON.
Yay!
That was an episode.
It was. I'm going to go away, and so should you. Listen to my brother and brother and me. My brother and me. Listen to a good podcast is what I'm trying to tell you. Welcome to Night Vale.
Oh.
I'm not saying you guys suck. I'm not saying that this podcast is terrible, but I am saying that there are better podcasts.
There's no better podcast with Ben Padden on it.
That's true. And I have no ego about it either.
If you do actually like our podcast, feel free to check us out at watchyourrassilon.com. And you can support us on our Patreon at patreon.com/watchathon. And we also have an Amazon wish list if you want to sponsor an episode.
If you don't like us, then you can go fuck yourself.
And thanks.
I'm just kidding. It's okay if you don't like us.
She's not kidding. She's made people fuck themselves before, and she will make them do it again.
We'll be back next time with the Smugglers, and that should have Jez Layman's coming back. And then
I'm coming back in, like, what, two episodes?
Yeah, you'll be back right after that with the 10th Planet.
Nice.
Maybe we'll have our shit together by then.
Yeah, nah.
Who is required?